Welcome to the Tradies in Business podcast with your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Divert your phone and grab a brew as Waz and Nick unpack tips, tales, secrets and stuff-ups from guests both inside and outside your trade, helping educate and inspire you to break the cycle of gut-busting and money stress and create a true trade business.
G'day, Nick. How are you?
I'm really good, Waz. How are you?
Good. I sort of swing between Nick or Coxie. I can't settle on which nickname I want to call you.
I will answer to both. I've had a lot of nicknames in my time, and they're two of the nicer ones.
Ah, right.
That's a conversation for another day.
We'll save that for an effort Friday.
I think so.
And I'll keep that family rated for this episode, because this is one of our regular. Well, they're all regular episodes, but yeah. Today is one that I did a lot over the years, and I haven't done a real tradie story for a while, so it was cool to do one of these with you now that it's Tradies in Business and we're collabing, to use the millennial speak. But a real tradie story today with a mate of mine, Paul Dolly from Dolly Concreting, and we intro him in the middle part of the show here, but... We were just talking then. He's such a nice guy.
Look, I was just saying that it's really rare to meet somebody so authentic and switched on and humble all in the one package. I was really impressed.
And even as he was leaving, because he came to my office to record at this end, and you're in our Brisbane studio.
Yeah, the Toowoomba studio and the Brisbane studio.
Yeah, which is a wanky way of saying my office or your office.
That's right.
But even as he was just leaving, I said, thanks heaps, mate. That was awesome. And he's like, oh, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, mate, you spoke really well and you've got a great story. Yes. He's like, yeah. I don't know, hey. It's like, it's this 6 foot tall, 105 kilo, you know, 250 kilo back squatting beast of a man. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. Was it any good?
He nailed it. I thoroughly love today's podcast episode. I think our listeners will find a lot of value in it today.
Oh, some absolute pearls of wisdom on, you know, buying a business, growing a business, building a team, retaining staff, dealing with customers, setting boundaries. Like Paul's pretty much just outlined the whole how to run a successful trade business in today's episode. So saved us a lot of work, actually.
He really has. It's nice and easy.
And he's even going to take my spot in the next CrossFit comp with another mate of ours because I've busted my wrist. So
he's just an all-around nice guy.
He is. But he does have a few flaws, and he shared those with us today. So have a listen and see what you think.
Enjoy.
All righty. So joining us on the podcast today is my co-host, Nicole Cox.
Howdy.
How you going, Nick?
Good. How are you?
Great. Thanks. And we've also got, well, all our guests are special guests, but I think this one is particularly special. He's a friend of mine. Am I allowed to call you a friend, Paul?
Yeah, I'd go there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So I'm going to refer to him as a friend. I might not be a friend of mine after today. But a friend of mine, Paul Dolly from Dolly Concreting. Welcome to the show, mate.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure, mate.
Welcome,
pleasure.
Paul.
Now, today we're basically going to talk to you as what we term a real tradie story. So, you know, you've made the cut, mate. You're considered a real tradie. Mm-hmm. Although someone recently in the group, the Tradies in Business group, was talking about the fact that that's more of a negative connotation, being called a tradie. I don't know. I've always thought of it more as a positive thing, but I guess we'll have our own perspective on that. Mate, tell our listeners a little bit about who Paul Dolly is and how you came to be, you know, one of the best concreting businesses in Australia.
Yeah, okay. So where do I start? Where do I start?
Well, you were born.
I was born.
Yep.
Well, basically, before the age of 24, I was actually a spray painter. My parents owned a spray painting business in town. My dad's a tradesman house painter. But a painter and decorator, I think they called him. Or still do, maybe.
Yep. Yeah.
He was pretty handy at spray painting as well as my brother, my older brother, who his first job was a panel beater. And then it sort of all came to a bit of a head around when I was finishing school that they opened up a panel and paint business.
Yeah, right.
And then, so I left school and I went to work for them for a few years, maybe about 3 or 4 years, I think, from leaving school and moved on. I think, I don't know what happened at the time, but the panel and paint shop closed down, so I went and worked for another couple of spray painters around town and stuff like that. And pretty much got to a point where I was getting sick every day. Like I was going home with a cold and I was getting headaches. Yeah. And
wouldn't have been from the fumes or anything, mate.
Yeah, well, that's it probably went for about 12 months and it got to a point where I was like, I think I need to get outdoors. So I just started scratching through the paper and found a concreter's labourer job going in Toowoomba here. And it was, they had advertised, I think, $17 an hour, which I think I was on $16 an hour spray painting. So
it's a good step up,
mate. You know, like I probably can't go wrong here. I can have a crack and make more money and see how it goes. And I got my first job concreting and I was very green. I didn't know what the tools were called or didn't know how to do anything pretty much. But I sort of jumped in the deep end a bit, and I think probably the first 4 to 6 weeks I'd go home every afternoon and lay on the floor with my back and go, what have I done. I learned really fast. Like I probably am a bit of a fast learner, from going to knowing nothing to my first concreting job to actually running my boss's crew was about maybe a 6 month window. I don't know, probably looking back, what the standard was like back then, if you know what I mean.
Must
have been
pretty low, mate.
Yeah, I know. I would like to go have a look at some of those jobs.
But, mostly flat.
Yeah. I left my first concreting job and I moved on to a really, really fussy guy who was really well known in town here. Really hard on his men for a reason, because he wanted quality. So I bit the bullet and took a job up with him. I can't recall why at the time. It might have been a little bit more money or I might have been chasing that, or I'm not too sure. I worked for him for about 3 years in total. My first year there was really green. I was like back to where starting to learn to concrete again, because I went from my first concreting boss to running his crew to this guy who was super fussy, and I was like, I don't know anything here. So it was probably one of the best things I did. I got to relearn everything, start fresh, and I worked with a couple of really good guys. He had a small crew of about 4 guys. And they were all around that 40-year-old mark and didn't really take any crap.
Yep.
And told us how it was, didn't beat around the bush. So, looking back, it was probably one of the best things I did. I formed a pretty good friendship with one of the guys there who was one of the head finishers. And he took me under his wing and he showed me pretty much everything that I needed to know and more. And then just, I think the guy I was working for, he was sort of pushing 60, and he was looking to get out, and a few of the guys that worked for him sort of knew that, and they all sort of parted ways and that, and I stuck around, and probably the last 12 months, I sort of worked my way up to running the crew there, and then. I think probably the last 6 months, he wasn't coming into work at all. He was just doing the quoting and I was pretty much sorting the boys out here and there and the jobs and the customers and all that sort of stuff, and got to a point where I was like sitting there one day and thought, I'm probably doing all this work. I'm probably the only thing I'm not doing is collecting the sending the out invoices.
Check, yeah.
I put it to him. I just said, look, I've got goals and going out of my own. I didn't want it to go bad or anything like that. And I actually pulled in, I got my trade certificate, went for my BSA license, and then I gave him a date of, so this was 2007, and I gave him a date of about 6 months ahead, and I said, look, November 1st, 2007, I'm going to go out on my own. I don't know what you're going to do. You look like you're going to retire. Like, I talked to him about it, so and sort of overnight, he came back at me with an offer to buy all his tools and gear and stuff like that, and the business and the goodwill and all that sort of stuff. And I went home for a few days and thought about it, and I went back to him and said, look, I don't know if I can buy you goodwill, because I don't believe there is goodwill. You know, I believe that you are the goodwill.
It's a tough thing with businesses is everyone thinks it's worth more. Well, yeah. Most people think it's worth more than it probably is.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And I know what he was trying to sell it for, because I'd seen it advertised the business on the internet. So he came back at me with half of what he was trying to sell it for, and I sort of stuck to my guns and I said, look, I'm going to go out in November, whether it's myself or whether I go out with a couple of boys, I'm going to do it, because this is what I want to do. And then overnight, he sort of came back and he'd sort of cut his price by 2/3. It was pretty much, and I sat down with Megan and sort of worked it out, and it was like, pretty much, we added up all the gear, because there was a few vehicles involved and a Bobcat and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, and we were like, you know, this is the price. This is what, if we went to buy it, this is what we'd be paying. So he pretty much knocked all the goodwill and all the whatever else he sort of had on top. And I took him up on his offer just to buy his gear off him. Because that the last 12 months or so, I was dealing with the builders and the customers, so I knew I had that base there. They all knew that he was going to retire, and then I was going to go out on my own. So I felt like I had a bit of a window there to work in with the customers and build good relations with the customers and the builders. So, and transition wise, 1st of November, it was just like another day of work. Like, it just went from working for Ian one day to working for myself the next day. Well, there was no sort of high or low period. It just went from... Yeah, it was a really smooth transition.
And so fast forward a bit over 10 years now, mate, 11 years?
11 years, we just ticked over,
And what's the business look like now?
Yeah, it's grown a bit. I think we started off with 4 employees that he had came with me from the 1st of November 07. And then we sort of... We've been up and down over the years with bigger jobs, smaller jobs, and stuff like that. We've 2 years ago, I think we were up to about 22 staff. That was to take on a fairly big job out at Charlton. Got to the end of that, and it felt like it was a bit too big, a bit unmanageable. So we scaled that down, which was a good opportunity to sort of... the guys who aren't performing, it really stands out when you're looking to scale down. You can really, I feel like you can really see who's not working. And it was a really, really good way to do it. And we're down to 14 now, and we've been like that for a couple of years now, and seem to be good at that number.
Still pretty impressive growth, mate. Like, even scaling back from 22 to 14, that's a sizable business.
Yeah, it is. It is. Monday mornings are a bit of a headache. It's a bit of a retraining day. But saying that, we've sort of built some good key guys there. Last year we've had 2 of our main men tick over the 10 years with us. So from day one.
Wow.
And as of this year, I had my brother tick over his 10 years. And then we've got another couple just notching up their 5 years now. So
that's great.
We've got some key guys there that we look after as well. And in return, they give us what we want.
Yeah, I think that says more about what you guys are doing in your business than it actually says about those staff. Yeah, it's clearly that you guys are setting the right example and doing what needs to be done for the retention. It's not an easy thing to have staff retention, particularly with concreters, which
you
leads
say.
Me to my question. I really do. So, Paul, we didn't cover this earlier. I'm a builder's wife, and I spent quite a few years scheduling our jobs, doing the project management for our company. There are two types of concreters in my experience. There's concreters and concreters. Which one are you?
I have had plenty of concreters work for us. That come and go, but they don't hang around a long time. Like I've said, I've got some really key guys in good positions. And they're real clicky bunch to get along with. So anyone that sort of comes in and carries on a bit and overrates themselves or basically says they can do something which you know they can't after the first 10 minutes, they don't last long. They're on the outer straight away. So we've tried to build that bit of a culture over the years, and I think it does work. It's hard work. It's very hard work.
So how have you gone about doing that, mate? Because we've had a couple of very brief chats over the time I've known you, which is not long, to be honest. But, you know, we talk about culture and we talk about culture on the podcast, and I talk to wingman clients, and I know Nick talks to clients as the builder's wife about you need a good culture and you got to foster this culture, and that's what, you know, is going to build your business and everything. Mm-hmm. What is it, and how did you build it, mate? Did it just happen by accident, or did you do things consciously?
I'm probably a bit of a softer sort of guy. You may not know that was, but I am.
I'm normally tell you to your face that you're soft, mate. Because for our listeners, we've got to share, mate, because this is an audio platform, and they're probably thinking, you know, who is this guy we're listening to? He sounds like a sweetheart, doesn't he? Give us your stats, mate. You're how tall and what do you weigh?
6 foot, 102 at the moment.
Yep. And what's your deadlift?
252.
252 Holy kilo molly. Deadlift. And your back squat, mate?
195.
You haven't hit 200 yet. So
no.
So Paul is not a little fella. Is that how you've built the team, mate? You've just intimidated the shit out of everybody?
Just told them they got to build.
No one back chats the big fella.
I don't know what it is. Look, I try. It's a really hard line to stay on, because you want to be their mate, your employee's mate, because I feel like you get... See, when I was coming up with my really hard boss, I was yelled at every day.
Yeah.
And it probably made me a better concreter, but I sort of wanted to do a different approach to it. Like, I'm not a... Like, I will crack the shits and say what I think, but it normally brews up over time. So I'm probably a bit, I like talking to the guys and talking about their weekends and taking them out to dinner and taking them to the footy and stuff like that, which I think it builds a bit of a mateship bonding between the boys. And I think that that mateship that they build, it can be a bit detrimental, because like I said before, it's really hard for other guys to fit in. So I don't actually know how it's built, but it has done. It's a hard thing to put my finger on.
I think, as we touched on before, it's just a reflection of who you are as a person. Often it's something that organically grows through your own experiences and how you want to do something different than what you've had before. So the benefits of having that real picky boss obviously comes through in the quality of your work, which you want to pass on to your next generation, so your employees.
Yeah.
However, you don't want to do it in the same way he did, with that regimentation and the discipline in the format that he did. So I guess it's a blending of expecting a standard to be reached, which is obviously what you do if the quality's still there, and then it's blending that with the time at the footy and catching up with the boys, I suppose.
Yeah.
Combination of all of that. But team culture can make or break a business.
I think probably jumping in the trenches with them too helps. I have tried. Like we've made plenty of mistakes in the business. About 12 months ago, I probably had about 4 months where I scaled right back from the business. And I wanted to be more of a management role. I didn't probably put on my gumboots for like 4 or 5 months. I got to a point where I was probably a bit too lax about it. And I felt like our culture was changing a bit. There was a lot of niggling with the boys and just seemed to be lacking a bit of leadership. I wasn't even coming there in the mornings to get the boys going. So I was sort of staying at home, letting them get going, and then I'd go and do the rounds and check on them and stuff like that. But yeah, I felt things changing, so I sort of knocked that on the head pretty quick. And I think being there, even just sort of being there at 5:30 in the morning, just having a chat and having a coffee before the boys get going, and then actually going out and, you know, jumping into a house floor and doing a pool with the boys where you can have a chat and a joke and stuff like that. And generally when we do that, we're sort of off the tools by 10 or 11 o'clock and the boys are happy because you've spent a bit of time with them, talked about their weekend and what they got going on and stuff like that. So I think that's a really key part. Like, as much as I'd love to be just management role in the business, which, you know, getting older, you probably want to step back a little bit. I think it's really important to have your business strong. You've got to be there for your boys and your staff as well. It doesn't run without you, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was reading something interesting recently about passive income from a business. Mm-hmm. And how there's this idea that, oh, you get your business to the stage where it just generates this passive income. And the particular commentator was basically saying how that's a crock of shit. Mm-hmm. And that it's not passive income, it's leveraged income. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can make 300 grand a year for 30 or 40 hours a week as a business owner versus the 100K you used to make for 60 hours a week, mm-hmm. busting your hump. And so it's getting the business to that stage where it does work better, mm-hmm. and makes more money, probably for the same time input, but on different tasks.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you found that's shifted for you over time, mate, where, you know, you think back when you started, obviously you were on the tools a lot.
Oh, it was crazy. Like, the first, when you first go into business, is pretty hectic and it's very stressful, not knowing. Because we had 1,000 questions to ask my old boss about, like, what, how much money do we need in a bank to get going? Like, you know, like, we're going to have bills straight away. And they were just like, you know, just let it go. Like, we got, you know, you got builders that they pay on time. It'll work. And
yep.
I think we started with, we might have had 5,000 in the bank and we had 4 staff in the first week. And it was like, that's pretty stressful, you know. Like,
it's paying wages, yeah.
And that first couple of years, like, we had a couple of big jobs on and I struggled to say no to people. So we were quoting jobs, we were winning them, didn't know how to say no. So we took on all this work, which means you're working 80 hours a week and then coming home and you're trying to do your invoices and quotes at night. And my middle boy, he was born in 2008, and like, his first couple of years is a blur. I'm more to the side of now, like, the kids are more important than work. So probably the fact that we have that 14 staff at the moment, like, it's a good number to let us do our 9-hour day or 10-hour day, whatever we need to do. And I prefer the boys to get away at 3 o'clock in the arvo and
yep.
spend time with the kids and the family and stuff like that, because you can see it in them the next day. They're so much fresher rather than working big hours like 6 to 6 or 6 to 7 or something like that. So Saturdays, I refuse, like, yeah, unless it's an absolute emergency, I'll refuse to work the boys Saturdays because I only get that one day off, and I just don't think it's enough time to reset for the week.
Yeah.
Especially
because it's a hard job, you know. We take the Mickey out of concreters. You know, like any industry, I guess, or any trade, there's good and bad. But it's a bloody tough job. Like, always outside, and it gets pretty warm up here on the range, mate. So.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I mean, the young fellas that come out of school and they wanna try concrete, and like we'll probably go through about we always say we go through about 10 guys to get one stayer. Which I don't know what other industries are like. I'd say it'd be pretty similar. And then that, I mean, we had a guy come out of school this year. He wanted to give concrete a go. He was pretty obese and overweight. And he'd freely admit that. After 6 months, he's been with us. He's trimmed down immensely. He fits in well with the boys. He just takes everything on the chin, and he is so happy just because he's lost all this weight. And just great. Got manual labour and stuff like that. So
yeah,
he loves it.
Yep.
What sort of challenges have you faced in your business that you wish you had have sort of known about beforehand so you could prepare for?
Challenges. There's a challenge every Monday morning.
Like, oh, shit, we're still here. We've got to do it again.
Yeah, like, I guess probably time tracking. When you quote in the early days, like I found when I quoted in the early days, you're probably winging it a bit. You're sort of guessing on how long things are going to take, especially the commercial jobs. And it's only probably after probably the first 5 years we started tracking expenses and job costings and stuff like that we actually sort of we have that. Well, we probably got 5 years of data behind us now because we started halfway in, and that's one big thing that I wish I'd done sooner, because like I said before, you make a lot of mistakes, and we probably still will make a mountain of mistakes, but
of course,
just that the job costings are probably a big one. Just having that data on a computer file, just to know that when you have that next job come up, you've got something there to look back on, and you can go into your jobs and quotes like really confident. And we find that now with newer concreters in town that sort of take on these commercial jobs, like we've lost a couple of jobs that we were super confident on. We've lost a couple by half of our quote at some stages.
Wow.
So and I mean, you can sit there and tell project managers that you know that doesn't work, but then, you know, it's a dollar at the end of the day.
Yeah,
so it's a hard one. So that's probably the main thing.
How do you deal with that, Paul?
Deal with it. Yeah. They always come back. Yeah, because the guys are going too cheap, and you know they're going in too cheap. We've been lucky. We've had enough work, and we always seem to have enough work in the pipeline that we can sort of stand our ground a bit. And they pretty much everyone that we've, the commercial side of things that we've lost a job to, they've always come back because the trade, the concrete is not going anymore, or they haven't, they've done a runner to Victoria or something like that.
Or they're at the pub at 2 o'clock.
Like
creatures.
So pretty much we just stand our ground and we're confident on how we quote and what we do now. So I pretty much just going on the data. We have it there to back us all the time. So we know what works and what doesn't work. So
yep.
Paul, do you have any kind of sales process that you've developed over that time?
Not really. Like I said before, when I started, I formed some really good relationships with a lot of builders. My previous boss, he was really hard, and he wouldn't put up with guys that wouldn't pay and stuff like that. So he wouldn't literally do work for guys that were late payers and slow payers and stuff like that. So when we transitioned into the business, we took with us a good bunch of builders, good payers. We were always paid on our 14 days, and we still are. So getting back to that, I've gone off track there, haven't I?
we do.
So
all
we're
the
just
time,
talking
mate.
About a sales process.
Oh, sales. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from there. Like, you know, as a builder, to find a good tradie in any capacity can be really, really difficult. So once you've got one, you're hanging on. You're going to do whatever it takes to keep them there.
Yeah, yeah. So pretty much sales process. Like we don't do a lot of – we do a lot of Facebook marketing and stuff like that, which is just done between Megan and myself in the office. So we'll put our pictures of our jobs up and stuff like that, how commercial jobs are progressing along the way and stuff like that, which we seem to get a fair few people talking about stuff like that. But as far as sales process, we don't really have too much in place, because we've touch wood, we've been really lucky the last 10 years that we've always had that steady flow of work, which sort of comes down, I think, to having that good bunch of boys that work for you that want to do good work, that you sort of get along with and you're not arguing with. And
it's interesting that you sort of point to your good team as part of that sales success. There's not too many businesses, let alone trade businesses, that would say, you know, the reason we keep getting work is because of our people.
Yeah, it's something we're really proud of. Like I don't know too many businesses that have held staff for as long as we have. Not that I talk to too many either, so we can't say too much.
we do, and it's not the common
not happening
situation.
Yeah. But. So I don't know. They're the key. You have to, if you want your staff to stick around, you have to look after them.
And it's one of the reasons I've been wanting to get you on the podcast, mate. And I wish we hadn't waited till November, because I'm sitting here looking at your mustache, mate. Because as we record this, listeners, it's the back end of November 2018, and Paul is sporting the dirtiest looking. I know Paul likes to say it's a porn star mustache, but I've been a bit a little less complimentary about what I think it looks like.
You know you like it.
I'm feeling a bit sweaty here, mate. But I have wanted to chat to you because you often reference your team as, you know, when you talk about the success of your business, it's about your people. It's not about you or your sales process or your branding or your Facebook ads or your pricing or anything. It's usually about your people. And you mentioned it earlier, you know, you are a nice guy. You're a good bloke. You've got a great reputation around town. I mean, you're coaching kids at CrossFit and you're heavily involved with, you know, football club sort of revival and all that sort of stuff. I guess, I don't know if our listeners are thinking this, but I'm sitting here going, so what is your secret? Because so many tradies seem to struggle with staff, getting them and keeping them and turning them into good ones. And it's not like you're dealing with brain surgeons here, mate. Like, they're concreters, with all due respect.
Yeah, like I said before, like we've come to the conclusion that we have to go through 10 to get a good one. So we have, if we're looking for a staff member, we have two rough months where we're employing guys and trialing them and stuff like that, and 9 out of 10 of them don't work. So it gets a bit painful that way. I don't know what it is, what we do differently to anyone else. I know in the concreting industry, like, guys chop and change everywhere, and generally we find, if we get a concrete finisher ringing us looking for a job, there's normally a reason why he's not working at the last place. So a lot of other concreters are like, I can send a quick text to and just say, look, this guy's asking for a job. Like, what's the deal? I normally get filled in pretty quick. So, we try and steer clear of troublemakers. We've had a few rats in the camp that'll start stories behind boys' backs and stuff like that. And I normally nip that in the butt straight away. Like, I just won't put up with it. And it's just having that core group of guys there that sort of think on the same wavelength as you. And I've been able to build that over time. And we sort of, I guess the builders too, like, we... we generally have we'll have my main man that works under me, who's one of the guys that's been there for 10 years, and then we have three leading hands that run a small crew on each job. So we assign them to a job, and generally I'll let the builder know that, look, this is guy is going to be on your job from start to finish. Any questions, any queries, here's his number. So client's got a direct route to what's going on,
yeah,
and it's not like a three-way phone call and things are getting missed, stuff like that. So I think builders and customers really appreciate that sort of thing too.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, when I listen to you talk about it, you're an ex-leaguey. When was the last time you played, mate?
It would have been when Megan fell pregnant with Emily, so 26.
But it's almost like, developing that footy squad where you handpick a few good ones and then you have a heap of guys try out and they have a run and and that core group start to influence the reasonable ones.
Yeah.
But then as the coach or the captain, you're cutting guys that just aren't worth it and you're doing it quick.
Yeah.
You don't let those things fester.
No. I try and nip it in the butt straight away. So if I hear a niggle going on, I'll just approach who the niggles came from and just sort it out. Like, and it doesn't normally get heated. It's normally just someone said this. Generally, I find the best way to sort stuff out is get the two guys that are niggling and put them together in front of you and just say, look, what's the problem? Let's sort this out. And
it probably helps when you're your side. No one's going to argue with you.
It generally sorts out in about 5 minutes flat, and that's pretty good. Like, we all move on and everyone's happy. So it's a good way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I want to talk a little bit about the expansion of the business and then the downsizing, because, those are quite challenging times. Those tipping points in any business, and it sounds like when you've been speaking that's something that you've done more than once. Mm-hmm. How did you approach that? How did you formulate a plan for expanding the business, and then how do you do that on the reverse to think about how to downsize that business?
Generally, upsizing. Like we were at a point. It probably would have been roughly around that 5 years ago. We were at a point where things were going really well, the business was strong, and we were like, you know what, we could be as big as we want to be. We seemed to have the quote requests coming through. We sort of started job costings around that time. We knew what we were quoting, and we were sort of sitting there going, we could be massive in Toowoomba. I think around that time we started winning a few extra jobs, and the biggest issue we had was just getting that staff, just getting the right ones, because like I said, you go through that 10 to get one good. If you want to increase your workforce by 5 people, there's a lot of people you got to go through to find that.
Yeah.
So transitioning wise, it probably, like I said before, we've made a lot of mistakes, and we've probably, we got hold of a footy club at one point when we won a large job, and they had a heap of Kiwis that come over from New Zealand to play football, and we put about 4 of the guys on. And they were good labourers. But every Monday they'd be injured or hurt or something like that. It was really hard. And then I guess that... that tipping point at 22 was really a bit of a stressful time, because we were sort of having guys having a day off, and I probably wasn't getting around to all the jobs because we had that many jobs going on, and I wouldn't even know that some guys weren't even there that day. So sort of transitioning wise, it's really easy, I think, to build, because you can get guys that are looking for jobs, but not the right guys. And you can win a big job, and you can hit panic stations and say, look, I need 6 guys. Go and employ 6 guys that don't know anything, and then wondering why your leading hands are whinging, going, we're not getting any faster. We're getting slower. So growing's getting guys was the easy part. Getting the right guys was really hard. We got to that tipping point at 22, and we're losing control. I didn't want the guys under me having to take on more pressure by stepping up another level. So, we finished a large job, and it was just like, nah, we're gonna have to, we'll go back.
Mm.
And to be honest, we're making the same amount of money as what we were making when we were, had the extra 7-8 staff. So,
just so often the case.
Yeah, it's just having the right people in the right positions. So, it's a learning curve.
Yeah, it's a never-ending learning curve.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask if you had any help in your business, Paul. So obviously you've got your staff, but learning how to run a business is not something that comes to us all naturally.
Mm-hmm.
I think from our conversation that I can determine that it is, you're definitely a leader. So that part of your personality is a natural part of your personality for you. But did you get help along the way, you know, whether it be from people that you had watched in the industry and admired and they gave you advice, or whether did you implement a coach at some point? What sort of things did you do to help you get your business to this point?
I made a lot of mistakes.
They're a great tool.
They're a massive tool. I guess we didn't really have anyone in our corner. I had my previous boss that had sort of helped me out for the first few months, but he was there for a little bit, and if I'd ring him, he'd tell me something. But I think that having that security of before starting the business, that last 6 to 12 months of running my boss's business, with him still in the corner, calling the shots, so I couldn't make mistakes. It was just a really smooth transition from that. So I probably did make a lot of mistakes in that time, but he was covering them, and he'd tell me if I did. So it was just sort of a, I think I was at the point, like I wanted to be a business owner, so I had to learn. And I had to, like, obviously you have to make mistakes to learn. So I watched everyone like a hawk, other concreters and how to do things and stuff like that. I just took it all in. And I guess along the way, it's just a learning curve of making mistakes and improving on those mistakes and make sure they don't happen again and things like that. Like I probably have more of a passion now in making sure our builders and customers are happy than what I do in actual concreting, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yes.
So I want to make sure that they're happy at the end of the day, and then that's where my passion is, more so than the concreting side of things. And that's where I think we're pretty lucky having that core group of guys that have a passion for concrete, because it works hand in hand, I feel. Mm. So,
So I want to ask you, mate, about working with Megan. You've mentioned her a few times, being your lovely wife. She must be a patient woman, mate.
Very.
like most of our wives. How have you guys gone working together? You know, you've been doing it for a while now. Does it go well? Have you guys learned any tough lessons there either? I mean, do you just shut your mouth and let her have her say?
Or? Oh, she grounds me a lot. I'm a bit out there with probably... And I've always been this way. Like if we need a certain tool or certain equipment for a job, I'm the type of person whereas I'll just go get it, because I want it done right. Whereas I know my old boss, he'd be like, no, just make this work, just use that, make that work. Whereas I'm a bit different like that, and she grounds me a lot in that ways. Like she'll question what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. I mean, she gets a bit stressed too, you know, like when the cash flow is a bit poor, if someone's holding off paying for an extra week or something like that, there's I normally cop it because I'm pretty pally with the builders, and she can send 5 or 6 emails to a builder, and I'll just send a quick text, and the money will be paid. So, and that's a relationship I have built up with the guys, with the builders. So, it gets heated some days. Like I get I get told to settle down, but yeah. generally, we work well together. She's very she does all the account, not the accounting, but the book work for the business and stuff like that. She's really good at that. The accountants praise her all the time. So she does that between the school teaching and comes into the office a few times a week and does the pays and all that sort of stuff. So
I mean, it's a busy household for you guys. You got three kids and a business and 14 staff and, you know, your wife does a bit of work elsewhere plus working in the business and you both train, you're coaching kids and you've just picked up a another job as the head of the footy club, mate. So congratulations on that one. But how the bloody hell do you manage it all? How do you not end up?
I'm still learning and I reckon I've got to learn to say no. I don't know. I guess with the business, like a lot of the, if we have a major problem with the business, I'll get a phone call. And I think having those leading hands that have direct contact with the customers, if there's a minor issue on a job, which no offense, Nick, but a builder always wants to ring after hours and let you know about it.
Of course.
So when there's a minor issue like that, they'll generally ring the direct contact that we, like our leading hands. So I probably won't know about it till the next day, which is good. Cause when I get home, I want to switch off.
Yeah.
And we try and do that as much as we can. So, I normally try and put the phone on silent and, throw it on the bench and go and play with the kids or go and train or something like that. So, it's a hard one, but we get by. I still feel like our priority with the accountants and we've told them that this is where we want to go because, I mean, accountants always pushing you to go bigger and bigger and bigger. but we've sort of put our foot down there and said, no, you know, we're at where we're at. We don't want to grow anymore. We're, you know, the business is profitable. We're turning over. We've got good customers. This is where we want to be, you know. So now we have that down pat. Like we can sort of work on the family side of things. It works. So we're generally home by 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon and got plenty of time for the kids and stuff like that. So
I guess a lot of us go into business so that we have that little bit of flexibility into our daily lives. I'm intrigued to know, as somebody who struggles to say no, how do you make time on a daily basis for your family? That's always a challenge. But when you're a yes man, I suppose is the right way to say it, and then you're happy to say yes to more and more work or challenges or whatever it might be, how do you prioritise that time? And is that something that you learnt or is it something that you've always done?
Oh, it's something I'm definitely still working on and I've learnt over the last few years. Just as the kids are getting older now, like Emily's 12 and Chloe's the youngest, she's 10. Coop's in the middle there. So it's definitely something probably on a daily basis that you have to make mindful of. Otherwise your week can slip away and you're like, you know what, I didn't even help Emily with her homework and stuff like that. So I think it's something you got to have subconsciously built into you. I think you have to train it that way. So you do set aside time for yourself and for your kids and your wife and stuff like that. So,
I agree. I see so many business owners, particularly men, who really struggled to put that in place. It really is a learned skill. It's something that you have to remind yourself of on almost a daily basis, that there is that family at home that wants to spend time with you and enjoy your company as well and not just work, Dad. And I guess as a woman, mothers have this instinctual guilt that comes the moment we're pregnant. We're guilty about everything all the time.
Yep.
But I don't think that men explain that they feel the same way a lot of the time. So it's important to me to highlight that, you know, there are people like yourself out there working day after day, trying to do a good job, be a great business owner, be a good husband, be a good dad. And be a good person. It's hard. You're feeling that same pressure and guilt that the rest of us feel.
Yeah,
so it's
for
great
sure.
to touch on how it is that you make those decisions.
Yeah, and I guess that's how we've built the business. Like, because I know I keep referring back to it, but we have that good bunch of boys there where, you know, if one of our kids is getting an award on assembly at 1 o'clock, like I can shoot off and do that. And I guess that's where we built the business, to that point where if I need to go and do something, I can do it. Like there's times where I've filled in at the gym down there at 9:15, you know, like I can take off for an hour and no one sort of misses me. So I think we have built that business to the point where I have that flexibility. It's taken a long time to get there, because I've always been so relied upon, and I probably still am. But yeah, that's the way I like it. Like I like things run my way. So I find it hard to let go.
You and every other business owner, mate.
Yeah.
So curious to know if you've got any advice for tradies in general, mate, without singling out builders, because I think everybody likes to poke the stick at builders within the trades. I was chatting to an electrician who came to do a bit of work at my house yesterday, and inevitably the conversation turned to the trades and, you know, dealing with other trades and, you know, having a rib at the builders. And I think they get the rough end of the pineapple because they're sort of, you know, they're the ones at the centre of most of those projects anyway. But if there were some words of wisdom, I guess, you could share with our listeners, whether they're plumbers or landscapers or whatever, in terms of running a good trade business, what are some things you wish that they would all do?
Just some key things. And we had a 10-year, I put a 10-year post up on our Facebook page, with a bit of a spiel about how we've made plenty of mistakes over the years. But I mean, priority is we pay our staff on time. We pay our bills on time and or ahead of time. We never let them lag at all. We always make way. So our suppliers and our core group of staff, all of our staff are paid on time. I think that's really important, and I think that can get lost a little bit. You get some guys around town that'll just pay bills when they want to and stuff like that. So, there's advice. Just trying to think.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of talk about the state of the trade industries in Australia, and, you know, some of the talk's positive and unfortunately a lot of it is negative. I mean, what's your view, mate? Do you think trades or tradies on the whole doing a good job, or, you know, do they need to pick up their act a bit?
I think a lot of kids coming through these days, and we've seen it over the last 5 or 6 years, a lot of kids coming out of school, they're very babied and cotton-wooled. And we find it harder and harder to find decent staff because of that fact. Like concreting is and as well as any other trade, it can be hard yakka. That is going to be an issue. I can see it coming through the future. Like, I mean, we've been lucky to get the guys we have, and hopefully they all sort of are happy and stay around for a long time. I'd love all my staff that I have at the moment to be there for the next 10 or 20 years, you know. So, I can see staffing being an issue in the future, yeah.
Yeah.
Just for that fact is everyone is cotton wool these days and told they can make more money doing something else.
We need to send a few of them to Dolly Concreting and get them to harden up, mate.
It's
a good old teaspoon of cement, mate. Well, look, I could sit here and ask you 1,000 questions, Paul. I know Nick and I have talked a bit about the state of the industry, and I know you're pretty passionate about your people, mate, which is an amazing thing to see, particularly in your trade. I think it's pretty impressive to see the length of service that you're getting out of some of your people. And as Nicole said, you know, obviously some good leadership there. As I look at the iPad here, because Nick's in the Brisbane studio and we're in the Toowoomba studio, and I can see one of your leading hands liking my Instagram posts coming up on the screen.
I hope I said something nice.
We should take a photo.
But it is after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so I suspect he's done for the day.
that would have been knocked off by now.
So, look, mate, I just want to say thanks for giving the time. I know you are still a busy man. I mean, it probably sounds a little to the listeners like, you know, you're living this living the dream, basically. You know, you're cruising around in the fancy new Hilux. You're working out at the gym with your 300 kilo deadlift and taking it easy. But it's not the case. I know you're very busy. So thanks for your time today, mate.
Yeah.
And best place to find out more about you would just be at the website. All the dumps, dollyconcreting.com.au.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. That's it.
DOLLEY. If you're wanting to, Nick's trying to take selfies of the screen
here. I'm trying to take photos of you guys.
So we'll, I'll get a selfie with Paul. Although I'll probably have to stand on a box before he goes, so that listeners, if you go to the website, tradiesinbusiness.com.au, I'll throw a photo up there of me and Dol, and you can see just how big I am not standing next to this mountain of a man. So yeah, mate, I guess one last question from me. What's next? Like, what's next for Dolly Concreting?
I think we're content. We have a good customer base. We have good staff. We're poking along. The business is going really well. I can go home at 3 o'clock in the arvo and switch off, and that's another key point I have with my builders. I've actually begged them not to send an email or a text after 3 o'clock in the arvo, and it actually works.
Yeah, nice.
So everyone, most of our builders have small kids as well, and I've explained to them all that how a text or an email can sort of stuff your whole night.
So you're teaching your customers, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good. Yeah.
It's a relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
But next, I've taken on this president role with getting this Newtown Footy Club back up and running. Probably another thing. I can't say
yes.
No. that'll be next year, and things are going well on that. The work front's nice and strong. We could have a good workflow there, and yeah, it's family time trip to Hawaii next year. So first big trip on a plane.
Nice, mate.
So it'll be good, yeah.
Might be the last.
Yeah, could be. Hopefully the volcano stopped by then.
Yeah.
Exciting times ahead.
Well, yeah. Thanks again for your time, mate. Great to have you on the Tradies in Business podcast, finally.
Yeah.
And I look forward to trying to keep up with your lifting in the gym, mate.
All good, mate.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Thanks, Nick.
You've been listening to the Tradies in Business podcast with Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Find out more about today's guest, tools for your trade business, and other cool stuff at tradiesinbusiness.com.au.